Feeling better, looking better, making life better. It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the Life Tip Show. I'm here with Scott Eblen. Scott, welcome.
Hey, Byron. Thank you.
Well, here's a topic and the sort and the title of your book, Overworked and Overwhelmed. Tell us a little bit about those two phrases that have become top of mind in the title of your book.
Yeah. So I'm an executive coach and leadership educator. I've been doing that for 14 years. And what I've noticed over the last 6 or 7 years in particular is that everybody I work with is overworked and overwhelmed, or almost everybody is. And I think it's sort of the epidemic of our age for professionals, and I felt like I needed to address it. So that's why we wrote the book, or I wrote the book.
Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you about it today. Is this a norm now, sadly? Are we really literally all overworked and overwhelmed, at least how we feel and approach our business world? And why is that?
Yeah, I don't know if all of us are, but I think a lot of us are. And, you know, the folks that I work with are usually mid to senior managers and executives in some of the larger corporations that we're all familiar with. And I think in that environment, most people are overworked and overwhelmed. And I think there are two big reasons for why they feel that way, because it is a feeling. You know, it's not a real tangible thing. You know, overworked and overwhelmed is a feeling that we have in response to things. But I think the reasons that we have those feelings track back, one, to 2008, the financial crisis of 2008. Organizations had to learn very quickly how to do more with less in order to survive. And what I see out there, and I talk with people about it all the time, including as recently as yesterday in a session with a group, is that more with less operating environment continues, even as the economy in the United States begins to improve. And I can test that by asking people if they're in the same job today that they were in a year ago, but the scope is a lot bigger today than it was a year ago. And usually 70 or 80% of the people say yes. And so that is an indicator of the do more with less environment that people have to work in. The other big factor started about a year before the financial crisis in 2007 is the introduction of the iPhone. And, you know, that computer that we carry around in our pocket that masquerades as a phone enables us to be hyper-connected 24/7. And I think it's raised the expectations of what people think they can do in a day or a week. And it's also erased any sense of boundaries that many people had for when they're on call and when they're not.
Is the smartphone a drug, essentially, in that it is almost difficult, if not impossible, for us to tune out and turn it off?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good way to think about it, because a lot of people are literally addicted to checking their smartphone. There's a chemical in your brain called dopamine. That's the same. You know, it's a chemical that makes you feel good. One of those neurochemicals, like serotonin, and it's been proven that every time your phone lights up or it buzzes, or you know that there's a new text message or an email, you get a little shot of dopamine because it might be something really interesting. You know, it's usually not, but it might be. And I reach for it. And then you can ask people, well, how many emails or texts do you get in a day? And, you know, it's a 200, 300, whatever. And so tell me what that looks like when you get that notification. People kind of jump with a start usually. I said, yeah, you know, so every time that happens, 200 to 300 times a day, you're getting this little shot of dopamine in your brain, and you are literally chemically addicted to your smartphone.
Those emails are not making us happy, and this feeling we have is clearly doing more harm than good. But what should we be focused on, Scott? What does make us happy?
That's a question they've been asking since Socrates, right? What makes us happy? Let me answer it this way. The subtitle of my book, Overworked and Overwhelmed, is The Mindfulness Alternative. And what I'm suggesting is that taking a slightly more mindful approach to life is the way to go. It's not trying to squeeze in 10 more hours a week of work. The average, according to the Center for Creative Leadership's study from last year, the average smartphone-enabled executive manager professional is connected to their work for 72 hours a week. There's only 168 hours a week to begin with. 10 more hours of work a week isn't going to get you there. 10 more hours of paying attention to your smartphone isn't going to get you there. What's going to get you there is to step back and ask yourself, what am I really trying to do here? And not by what am I trying to do here, I don't mean just at work. I mean in life. Like, why are you here? And giving yourself the space to mindfully tune in, I call it awareness plus intention is my definition of mindfulness. Being aware of what's going on around you and inside of you, and being intentional about what you're going to do or not going to do next. I can't guarantee that leads to happiness, but I think you've got a better shot if you take it that way.
What happens when we successfully practice mindfulness? Do we feel happier? Are we more productive? What's the net result?
Yeah, I think you are more productive most of the time, and you have a higher likelihood of being happier. But again, I want to make really clear what I mean and what I don't mean by mindfulness, because I think when people hear that word, they often think of, you know, Buddhist monks chanting and meditating for hours at a time, or you know, somebody blissed out on a yoga mat or whatever, and all that stuff's fine, but a lot of people, that's not going to fit their life or where they are right now. So what I'm suggesting is all those thousands of year old traditions that are associated with mindfulness that seems like the barrier to entry is too high, there are things that we can learn from those traditions that are easy to do and likely to make a difference for just about anybody. And what we're trying to do is get ourselves out of the chronic fight or flight state that many professionals find themselves in today because of all the input that's coming in, and access the other aspect of your autonomic nervous system. Fight or flight is the sympathetic nervous system. The opposite of that is the parasympathetic nervous system. That's called rest and digest. And what all the mindfulness traditions have in common, really, is they all activate our parasympathetic nervous system, our rest and digest response. Fight or flight is the gas pedal. Rest and digest is the brakes. Just like you do in a car, we need both the gas pedal and the brakes in the way we run our bodies and our lives. And so what I'm trying to get across with this book is there are simple things that you can learn from mindfulness that you can apply right now in your life that are going to activate your rest and digest response, slow you down a little bit, give you more perspective about and make you more aware about what you should be doing, or maybe more importantly, what you shouldn't be doing.
Scott, you were a former Fortune 500 executive yourself. Do you think that there's tension between, you know, coaching and training executives on being easy on themselves and perhaps being easier on their employees working for them in terms of productivity, goals, demands, pressure?
And so the tension is between, I'm not quite
Tension. Well, the tension is all about the corporate ladder and rising to the top and becoming workaholics and rewarding people that are displaying that commitment to the company by giving them raises and giving them promotions. Is there tension there?
Well, I think, you know, the difference is between activities and results. You know, they're not the same thing. And so if you are engaged in the activity of working all the time, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting results. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that I think we should focus on is, what are you really getting done? And maybe the best way to get meaningful things done is to not do so many activities. Like, you know, putting in the hours and answering the emails all hours of the night. So that's one distinction. I think the other thing to think about is, what story and whose story are you living in? You know, it's really easy to get sucked into a corporate story that we all have to act as if we're someday going to be the CEO of this company and, you know, approach our work in that way. Because if you're the CEO of a major corporation, that's an all-in kind of choice, you know? Most people who have ended up being CEOs made a decision somewhere along the way that they were all in on their career. And they optimized for that. That's fine. That's the decision they made. Not all of us are going to make that decision in that way. Doesn't mean you still can't be a really valuable person to your organization. You just don't have to act and work as if you're going to be the CEO someday, because you don't even want to be. And you're probably definitely not going to be. But you're living your life as if that story is your story.
Habits are difficult to change. What are some tips and success that you might have in the book that would help people through that very difficult and challenging process of changing behavior?
I like to call them habit hacks, you know, so start small. And again, we're working in the sweet spot between, if you think of an XY graph with easy to do on the vertical axis and likely to make a difference on the horizontal, the sweet spot is the upper right-hand corner of that graph. You want to work on stuff that's easy to do and likely to make a difference. And I'll give you a quick example. A woman that I worked with or talked with earlier in the year has a habit now that she's formed. When she pulls her car into the garage at night, she has to walk through the laundry room between the garage and the kitchen. To get into the kitchen and the house, she has to go through the laundry room. Let me just get a quick drink here.
Sure.
A little bit of frog in my throat. She has to go through the laundry room to get to the kitchen. So she's got her iPhone charger plugged in over the washing machine. And her new habit is to pull her phone out of her purse when she's in the laundry room, plug it in over top of the washing machine, turn it face down on the washing machine and leave it there, and then close the laundry room door. She doesn't go back for her phone until her kids are in bed 2 or 3 hours later. And I asked her, I said, was that like hard to do when you first started doing it? I said, oh my gosh, I felt like I'd lost my arm. You know, for the first couple of weeks, I was so used. I mean, she was addicted to the dopamine of checking her phone. I was so used to checking my phone that it was hard the first couple of weeks, but the benefits were so apparent in the first night. My kids were more fun to be around. They were easier to manage. We had conversations we never have. My husband was happier. I was happier. It was all good. And so the benefits were so great, even on night one, that she was totally willing to change the habit. So it's like Charles Duhigg talks about in The Power of Habit. You know, it's a cycle of cues and actions and rewards. And the cue for her is when she hits the garage, she knows she's going to the laundry room. That's the cue. Leave the phone in the laundry room. The action is go about the evening without the phone. And the reward is, wow, this was a great experience. So I'm going to repeat the cycle. And was that relatively easy to do for her to plug the phone in? Yeah. Was it likely to make a difference? Yeah, it totally did. So that's look little have action, you know, stuff that low barrier to entry that would possibly make a difference.
Other than smartphones, what are some other distractions that are causing us to corrupt ourselves?
YouTube, Twitter, flat screen TVs that are in every public space that we ever go in, and they all say breaking news, even though the story's 2 weeks old. The distractions are so voluminous now. You know, there are so many devices and items and bits of information that are competing for our attention. And again, that's why I keep going back to mindfulness as being awareness plus intention. You know, I'm aware of what's going on around me, but I'm also aware of what do I really need to focus on, and then I can be intentional about focusing on that.
What was like life without these distractions around us? I can't remember.
That's exactly true, isn't it? I mean, you know, again, the iPhone was only introduced in 2007. It seems like it's been around for 30 years because it's such a huge part of our life. And it's not all bad. I mean, you know, I use my phone all the time for Google Maps and Uber. And I mean, I travel a ton. You know, I'd die without my United Airlines app on my phone. I'm really thankful to have it. But does it have to control my life? No, it doesn't. I can use it. You know, I use it. It doesn't use me. But quite often we get into the other, you know, the other end of that dynamic.
Let's take a break and we'll be back in just a minute, everyone.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
When you started your business, you first listened to your professors. Now that your business is growing and gaining ground, you only seek out professionals. PPC Professionals, an industry leader for highly optimized search marketing campaigns with over 30 years of combined management experience. Our professional approach to every campaign helps you find every avenue of revenue so that you can not only stay ahead of your competitors, but get a return on your investment and increase your bottom line. PPC Professionals, personal, professional, PPC services, ppcprofessionals.com.
ShipStation helps online retailers ship orders faster. It's so easy to set up and use. ShipStation gives you tools to automatically import, manage, and ship your orders in the most cost-efficient way. Save money with the best USPS rates possible, as well as a free USPS account. ShipStation integrates with all the most popular e-commerce platforms and shipping carriers. Get shipping done no matter where you sell or how you ship. WebmasterRadio.fm listeners get an additional 30 days free after the free 30-day trial. Go to ShipStation.com/WebmasterRadio now. Shipping Nirvana. Introducing Rumble, the smart mobile management system, the first end-to-end mobile platform where you can make real-time app modifications from a point-and-click dashboard. Want to change the design of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the ad map of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the content mix of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Power your mobile business with Rumble.
Are you ready to rumble?
Visit www.rumble.me.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We're here with Scott. Scott, pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you, Byron. I'm enjoying it.
Difficult question for you, but do you think we've reached the point of no return from being completely absorbed with all these distractions?
No. I don't. I think it's an individual issue. You know, perhaps as a society, that's where we're headed. But again, that's the story for society. What I really want people to focus on is, what's your story? Or what do you want your story to be? And one of the things that I heard a lot about when I was doing the interviews for my new book is boundaries and guardrails. And do you have any? Do you have any boundaries and guardrails in your life? That's the first question. And the second question is, if you have them, does anybody else know what they are? Because if they don't know, if nobody else knows what your boundaries and guardrails are, you're not likely to stay within them. You have to reinforce your boundaries or enforce your boundaries with yourself and with others. And so again, I'm just asking people to be aware and intentional about what their boundaries are or what they need to be. Because all the devices make it really easy to totally forget what they ever were, what the boundaries were.
Could you imagine a company that had a no cell phone zone or a 10 to 2 no email communication? We have to actually